Okay, I'm gonna call this meeting to order. Can I get approval for the minutes from April 18th?
Make a motion to approve.
Any questions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
We're gonna take 179 out of order. That is amending the rules of order to include a specific start time for standing committee meetings of the legislature.
Well, that's not accurate, actually.
What is accurate?
No, starting before a specific time.
I'm open for discussion.
You can set the meeting for any time you want, but you can't, other than, you can't set it before 6 o'clock.
I'm moving for discussion.
You can set it for 6:30, you can set it for 7 o'clock, you can set it...
Where did that go?
I don't know.
Hector says we'll be right back. So we got a motion by Mr. Bifiglio, second by Dave Donaldson, and Pete wants to talk about it.
Well, I think it's appropriate. I think that it's giving people an opportunity to get home from work, relax, take it easy, and then come to the meetings. I mean, we talked about transparency, we talked about open government, we talked about all these things. And then we hold meetings when people can't attend. And if I recall correctly, when the SAFE Act was done, that was one of the biggest contentions, that he held it at a time that was secretive. He did it at night. Nobody could be there. Nobody could attend.
It was midnight.
What?
It was at midnight.
Well, it was at midnight, but I'm just saying.
According to this, we can have the meetings at midnight.
Well, technically...
Well, according to this, you can have them now at midnight.
It could have been in the morning then, because 12:01 a.m., it was too early.
So the point being is that, I mean, if we want to have...
It started at 11:59.
If we want to have a transparency, if we want to have all those good things that we talk about, then I see no issue with having a meeting not before 6 o'clock.
Very good. And I see no reason not to call a vote.
Well, can I?
Go ahead, Dave.
No, he's your chair.
Rich.
Oh, thank you. Pete, my only issue, my main issue is some people who live far away, there's plenty of meetings that last 2 hours or more. And there's people that live 45 minutes from here, half an hour. And, I think what's worked forever is chairman at the beginning says what time works for you guys. Everybody kind of agrees on a time. And sometimes it's 4:30, sometimes it's 6:30. And that's when we make the committee meetings. I mean, I think the Ways and Means is a standing committee. They have budget hearings. In October or November and December, you're saying they can't start till 6 o'clock at night?
Well, you could write in an exception, but I'm just saying that they shouldn't be standardized. That there should be a standard rule that says committee meetings should not be held before 6 o'clock unless there is some special reason to change that.
Legislator Donaldson?
I don't know. I don't like the idea of... I understand the argument, but I just don't like the idea of over-regulating us in that manner because, as Rich said, normally what happens is you have the meeting and, I mean, I've had a meeting, we used to have the meeting here and I asked if you could do it a half hour later. He said, yeah, no problem. Everybody agreed we had it a half hour later. Other times we make it earlier. If we have people say, well, can't we meet at 5 instead? If everybody in the committee says yeah, then they meet at 5.
If everybody on the committee says, that's fine. But the problem with that is not everybody can make it to these meetings.
Well, you know,
and it's as much an inconvenience for them as it is for
but it's an inconvenience for somebody.
Wait a minute. Depends on your.
Well, what if I don't get out until 9 o'clock at night if I work in an evening shift? In other words, are you telling me then we got to make?
Well, I mean that's the exception to the rule, Dave. We've actually changed nights that we were going to. When I started here, we were having our meetings on Thursday nights and our regular meetings. And why did we change them? Because people wanted to change them.
We made the change.
Because it was more convenient for them. That's all. I'm just saying.
What I'm saying is I don't want to see this set like this. I don't think that's the way to go. I mean, the committee should make the decisions when they do that. I don't agree with the idea of just saying they can't have a meeting before 6 o'clock. Not only that, but in other words, I know when
Unless
I now it's not a big
to,
deal for me. But when I was
so
teaching, I'd get out at 3.
If everybody
I didn't want
agrees,
to come here and go
and
home and then come back here at 6.
One at a time for the microphone. And I'm going to let Mr. Bifiglio talk, then Richie, and then you could follow up, Pete, if you...
Okay.
I mean, I don't consider the start time of a committee should be at our convenience. I mean, it should be doable for every legislator,
right.
But we're here to serve the people. But that said, I work full-time. I drive here right from New Paltz. It takes me exactly half an hour to get here. So I could get here technically by 4:30 every day. And actually in the summertime after Memorial Day, my work hours are cut by half an hour. I only work till 3:30. What if we did something like this? Just make an amendment to say start time 5 o'clock, and then, because I don't think any of the committee meetings ever start before 5 o'clock, except special circumstances where night of session, we have a special Ways and Means Committee meeting, or during the budget time, which, you know, I don't mind coming in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to start
our budget hearings. Here's my problem, and this is my problem with this, is I had to take myself off of a committee because I had to choose between my job and the committee. That's wrong. I shouldn't have to make those choices. It's that, and that's the bottom line. I should not have to choose my job, my full-time job that pays my bills, or a committee meeting.
Can I just?
I think that's unfair.
Pete, I don't disagree with you. I think part of the problem is, at least I've seen in the last few years, legislators like to get on two committees that meet in the same night because they can kind of kill two birds with one stone. Maybe the solution is you can't have two committees in a night, or a legislator, like tonight, I'm on two committees. So if you said 6 o'clock committee time,
but I wasn't on,
I have to come off of one of the two committees.
Well, you see, and I understand what you're saying.
And it helps me out because I'm just right. making one trip
and,
in instead
and I get
of two.
That, and I get that. But that wasn't the case with me on this committee. I had I was on the committee that met before you. Right. They meet at 5 o'clock. I can't do it. I'm not quitting my job.
No, well, this meeting meets at 6:30 because they want it back-to-back for people that are able. He's on both the committees, and so is he. So they made it easier for some legislators, I guess.
I understand that, but that's not my point. That's not my point.
Did you ask to move the committee to another day?
I mean,
you never came to I didn't hear you in a committee meeting say, can we move this to Wednesday? Can we move it to...
I asked, actually, John, if he could move it to 6 o'clock.
Well, he can't because we have a 6:30 meeting the same night.
Well, then he said he wasn't going to do it anyway, though, and that's my point.
Manning asked him, Legislator Green asked him at a meeting, can you make this meeting later because I can't be here at 4:30? He said, fine. So he had no problem moving it from Anna.
He moved it from 4:30 to 5 o'clock.
Because we have a meeting at 6
okay.
or 6:30.
And I'm just saying, and it's not just me. There's others that have to worry about getting to committees.
The only
well.
Issue is, you got Ways and Means that starts at 4:45 or 5:15. You've got special meetings. I just think,
let me tell you, I have no problem with them holding them before, as long as the entire committee agrees to it. If the entire committee agrees to it...
Does it say that in the resolution?
It doesn't say that, but we can change that.
Well,
but the entire committee has to agree.
I understand. Listen,
it shouldn't be. The committee should not be a process that allows certain people to attend and restricts other people from attending.
But that's always going to happen. I don't give a damn what it is. Well, no matter when you have a meeting, it's always going to be, it's not the perfect time for certain people, no matter how you look at it.
Unless we were full-time legislators getting paid $60,000 a year.
But once again, and I just want to reiterate what Carl said.
Yeah.
Right. We're here to do people's business, and we should allow people to attend. It's not just me. It's the general public. If you're holding meetings when the general public can't attend because it's inconvenient, because it's impossible, because they're at their jobs, I think, once again, we're restricting people's rights to attend meetings.
Any other comments on this? I think we beat this up pretty good.
I just want to make one statement that, you know, besides my committee assignments, I'm on a couple of boards.
So am I. I'm with you.
Meet during the day. I got one board, Ulster Prevention Council, meets at 9:30 a.m. every other month, last Friday of the month, Community Action. And it's hard for me to make these things. Sometimes I take a vacation. I take, cut right out of my vacation, I take a half a day vacation so I can go to Ulster Prevention Council. I used up all my vacation, so I told them I couldn't attend any more meetings until after June 30th when my vacation comes up. I mean, that's a sacrifice we have to do. I'm not saying that, you know, 4:30 is an appropriate start time or 3 o'clock is an appropriate start time, but a lot of the legislators do serve on other boards, you know, at the pleasure of the chairman, and we get appointed, and somehow I do my schedule. I'd be willing to support this at 5 o'clock, just say 5 o'clock, except where extenuating circumstances.
No, I can't do that because my boss says, no, I need to work. I
you
have
work
to
for the
there.
State, though, right? How much vacation? You got a lot of vacation time. Once
you're
a month,
right.
You take a 0.2 vacation hours. Hey, I do it. I do it all the, all the time. I mean, I give up my vacation to serve the people in this county. I mean, I don't give it all up. I get 24 days a year, but.
So you're selfishly holding back?
No. Oh, yeah, I've got to burn a vacation between now and June 30. Yeah. So I got tons of it. No.
Like I said, I just feel that it is an inconvenience for the legislators, but it's also an inconvenience for the general public. And I remember when I first came here and I served on a committee, and the chairman will remain nameless. Was holding meetings at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I looked at him and I said, I can't do this. It's cutting right into my day, and my employer has told me that I can't just take off from work to be here. And the response given to me was, well, you see, that's a problem when you want to be in politics and you have to work for a living. Okay, and I never forgot that. And it bothers me because it's the same thing. It's no different than what he said to me.
Hey, Hector.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I apologize, but just for clarity's sake, are we have resolution 179 and 180.
Yeah.
Which one are we?
We're
going
talking about
with?
179. 179. I should have piggybacked 180 with it.
I mean, I was going to say, in many ways, it just not because they pick your poison. One is more permanent than the other, clearly. If we're adding it to the rules, that's a permanent thing. If the resolution, that would be for the term, I imagine, as opposed to for the rules. So.
180?
Yeah.
Can I like to amend my original motion. Can I piggyback 180 with it so we can discuss both of these at the same time?
We'll discuss the first one and then the second one. No, I'm kidding. Look at him. I'm kidding. Not a second.
Fair enough. Let's
I'm kidding.
Talk about
I seconded.
179.
I seconded.
I third it. Anyway.
Erica, do you have any comment on 180?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
180 is not applicable. What is applicable for these purposes is 179, because you amend your rules of order. Your rules of order direct on how the legislature is to conduct its business. 180 sets a policy, and we don't set a policy for how the legislature operates. You have your rules of order, so you amend them. This would be applicable. 180 would be appropriate if you're setting a policy for the entire county as to when meetings should be conducted, but this is 180 specifically just to the legislature. Therefore, 180 is really not applicable. 179 is the appropriate way to address the legislator's concerns.
Can I ask a question?
You can ask a question.
But creating a policy gives more freedom for the legislature to make changes down the road if they decide that they want to change it to something else. If you do it as if you do change the rules of order, it becomes permanent. With very little say unless they change the rules again. Is that correct?
Wow, you just threw me a total curve on that one. I don't agree with you, Legislator Lauren. The rules you don't set a policy for how you're going to operate. You have rules of order. And that is, you direct on how you're going to conduct your business, and it's the same as a bylaw, your bylaws. So,
we set policies every day on how.
But
we're
that's for
operate.
How the county itself is supposed to conduct its business, not the legislature itself. So you have your rules of order, which is your playbook. If we're going to do this, we have to do that. Just as, for instance, right now, as opposed to changing your how you're going to handle memorializing resolutions.
Okay,
you're not doing it by a policy. You're changing your rules of order to direct on how memorializing resolutions would be addressed. This is the same thing. You don't set a policy for yourself. You set rules for yourself so that you know how you're going to abide by things. You have set course on how things are going to be addressed. The policy does nothing. It serves no purpose, because it's not applicable to the whole county. If you wanted to say that every meeting that was going to be held in the county she cannot be held before 6 p.m., then that would be a policy.
So what you're telling me is I cannot say that every legislative meeting must be held after 6 p.m.
Not by policy. You
by
have
rules of order you can.
By rules of order
you can.
By the rules you can.
But not by policy.
But and quite frankly, your rules of order don't you change the same way as you would your policy. You just have to have two consecutive readings of any rules change.
Okay.
So it's not, I mean,
that's why you
I'm not both. Quite sure about the permits okay. Well, readings is to make sure that the legislative every legislator's had an opportunity to read the amendment, forgive me. And
so I have to bring it back next month to change the rules.
Well, you already have a rules.
You already got it.
You already have it here.
It's right here. 179 is appropriate.
She's as I say,
180 is not.
So do I take it you're gonna rule 180 out of order?
I don't I've made my recommendation to the chairman and I've made my comment. It's up to the chairman to rule something out of order. I'm hoping that Legislator Lauren, I believe that Chairman Ronk, and I can't speak for him, but I believe that the hope is that Legislator Lauren would withdraw 180 in light of the fact that it's not Hector. Applicable.
I was going to say, if you vote on 179, 180 is automatically redundant. So.
It's a moot point.
All right.
So do we got to, do you want to vote on 179?
I'd like to make an amendment. Can I make an amendment?
If you must.
I'd like to make an amendment in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5th whereas, change 6 to 5, and then except for special meetings called by the chair of that committee. And that would cover like ways and means when we do,
do
budget
it.
Time.
You can't do it because she just said you can't do have a policy.
No, that's the rules.
179, you can change.
Right. The rule, I'm saying 179. Start time 5 p.m. except for special meetings called for by the committee chair. And I'm sure it's not going to be abused. I can't think of any committee that starts before 5 except in a special circumstance.
Do we have a second?
No, I'm not. 5 o'clock is too early.
Without a second, the amendment dies. All in favor of 179?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
180, do you want to vote on it just for the record?
Okay, you know what? I guess what? I can pull, they're both mine, so I'll take and pull the 179.
Or 180.
Or 180.
Let's just do the vote on 180 real quick.
Okay.
All in favor?
Was it moved?
I don't have.
We moved it
I'll
together.
Move 180.
They're going together.
All right.
I mean, they've been moved previously together, but yeah. I'll move it. These
Hector.
Together.
Hector.
Carl.
No, I'm not going to second it. It's a moot point.
All right, there you go. All right.
It's a moot point.
Do a vote on it.
All in favor?
Oh, I'm sorry. To vote. Second to vote. Okay.
Yeah.
All opposed, 180?
I'm sorry, I thought we were already voting on it.
Rich, did you vote?
180, I don't know.
Thank you.
So it okay, Jim, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay.
Always a pleasure to visit this with you.
5 o'clock.
The
t-shirt went
back.
5 o'clock was
too early.
No,
it's
my glasses.
Hi there, Mayor.
It's your call.
Okay, we're going to get back in order and do 176, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4.
It's going to make no meetings start before 6 o'clock. Give me a break.
5 o'clock.
And we're going to amend the hotel motel tax occupancy.
I'll move the resolution for discussion.
Second. I'm seconding.
Hector?
Mr. Chair, I'd actually like to seek advice from our legislative council on this.
Is it
moved?
Yes. What would you like to know,
Leader
Rodriguez?
So,
how can I be of assistance?
Oh, Eric. according to minority counsel and to the county attorney, and I believe you as well, share the same opinion that we actually have a hiccup in state law with regards to this, correct?
Yes.
Can you elaborate, please?
The law, the local law as it's proposed is not, we're not able to enforce or undertake this local law because we do not have the authority to collect or have any agreements with a third party under the enacting statute that allows the county to collect the bedroom tax.
What do I do? We vote on it. Dave?
I'm not sure about, I'm sure you read what it is, but my concern here is, again, it's the idea of fairness. You have people that are basically operating a B&B through Airbnb and not paying the sales tax, and those people that Carl operates his B&B and he's paying his sales tax. What's going to stop him to say, well, that with this, I'm not going to operate it, I won't do it anymore with them, and I'll just book through Airbnb, and I won't do it now. So I have a problem with the fairness of this, and I'm not sure if the way the law is set up and with its intent. Would I be able to ask the attorney from the comptroller's office, Evan, if he can weigh in on this? Could you give me some information on from your point of view?
Surely. So discussions with the county exec's office. What we do right now is piecemeal application for law. So if...
I don't think that's fair.
No.
That's not a fair characterization, Mr. Gallo.
Erica, if the attorney can finish, then you could counter debate him, please.
I'll have an opportunity to rebut.
You will,
rebut,
I promise you. Go ahead, sir.
Right now, if an operator, owner of a short-term rental or vacation property is diligent and nice enough and follows the law well enough to feel that he or she should be paying the 2% on that property, and comes forward and gives that and remits that money back to the county, we will rightfully accept that. However, we stop short of wholeheartedly endorsing and telling those entities to pay the tax.
Right now.
Right now. So there is.
But
no,
you say if they're nice enough, so you expect them to pay.
Essentially. So.
And that's your opinion.
That is what was represented to me, as far
by who?
By Deputy County Executive Crinn. And as far as what we've seen, as far as the collections go. So there are a handful of, I'll call them quasi-B&Bs, that do collect and remit the tax on their own. But those are hosts and operators who feel that they should be playing by the same rules as everybody else, and that they should be paying the 2% tax. So we know of an operator in Kingston, Kerry Henderson, poster child of trying to become the responsible Airbnb owner and operator. So he pays the 2% tax, he's duly registered with the county, and he pays it according to the schedule. He also went to the city of Kingston and applied and handles the code enforcement aspect. But he took it upon himself to pay the tax.
Can I ask a question? If somebody didn't pay the county gas tax or county sales tax, would the county go after that establishment?
Sure. Yes.
Why don't you go after these B&Bs?
Because it's Airbnb. It's not, they're vacation rentals.
No, this is talking about
people own these properties. Airbnb does it. They just use that to advertise. Am I correct?
You are.
Yes.
It's a gray area. It's an enforcement problem. Part of what we're trying to accomplish is shedding a spotlight on these properties, making them register with the county, making sure the county can keep somewhat tabs on them of where they are, where they're operating. Because right now, they don't technically have to register.
And I think, in my opinion, if you don't have the authority to go after these businesses, I don't think you have the authority to collect this tax.
That's correct. Well,
we're starting to get into... It's different. I'm not really sure where you went.
You're right. You're correct.
You pretty much told us you don't have the authority to collect the tax or bring this these businesses to court or
that's
wherever
what
you bring them.
It's a yes and no. Again, if they come forward and say we want to pay, we will gladly take their money. However, what this would do is clarify the reach, not expand it, but clarify, which is what we've seen in several other municipalities, which have gone into their local laws and just inserted short-term vacation rentals right into the definition of a hotel, and then, poof, now they're under the law. But the way hotel and motel is constructed in our authorizing statute is broad enough to be able to allow these type of tourist activities, which is, again, what we've seen in other municipalities, either saying that their law on the books is enough, similar to our definition of hotel-motel, because all it is providing overnight lodging, and you are, in fact, operating as a de facto hotel, or they, again, just put in one or two words, short-term or vacation rental, to clarify the reason. But that's the definition of the hotel. The third party collecting and remitting the tax is a different one. And what I have heard from Airbnb is that one county, to be named later, is about to go live with what they're offering right now. So they felt that under their state statute, which is 8.5 out of 10, same as ours, they felt that they had the authority to collect and to have a third party collect and remit the bed tax portion.
Erica?
Well, with respect to piecemeal, right now, what the statute allows is that it's the term facility is what they use with respect to the definition of motel and hotel. Right now, and I don't know of any person that describes a residence, because most of these Airbnbs are residents. These are people's homes. They are people now starting to buy investment properties for Airbnb, and I will tell you I have clients that are doing that right now. But most of the time, they are residences. And the county is applying the law as if we are authorized. To facilities, we're only allowed to collect from owner and operators. And so that's why we really can't go right now, as the definition is in the enabling statute, to go after Airbnb. It's not allowing for a third party. And I have very serious doubts right now. I do not agree with Mr. Gallo about the short term, these definitions. The problem is that every enabling statute is different for each county. And I'm not going to say that it's a right, wrong way of doing things, but Suffolk County gets to collect taxes on campgrounds and more things than we are able to. The legislature, the state legislature, is very keen on guarding what they allow sales tax to be collected on, because they don't want to give up that revenue stream themselves. So they're very, very cautious about what authority they allow. There's also the bigger problem that is on a local level, is that a lot of these places are residential, so they're in R1s, where people are expecting to be the only residents. They're not expecting to have people come in and having these rental issues. It drains on the resources. And one of the things that I've been discussing with Mr. Gallo is we really need to figure out what the towns want to do, because it's a zoning issue. Because not only is it about, it changes the tenor of the neighborhoods, but it's also, it drains on resources. And then it's also a possibility with assessment. Because right now, every person who has a home, you're assessed based on the fact that it's your home. You're not really making rental income from it. But now, you're subjecting yourself to possibly having your assessment increase if you're generating income from it. There's other things that also go in that are other broader issues, and I just want to limit it to those things. So I don't think it's just this one, it's a Band-Aid that I still don't even think we have the authority to do right now. So I think we need to do our homework before we just go out and try to collect the funds. I'm all about trying to collect the funds, but I think we need to do it judiciously and not knee-jerk reaction.
Legislator Donaldson.
What you're saying is concerning me even more. So in other words, if we don't go after them, start moving towards this, that means, you know, I mean, I could move into this neighborhood where I'm figuring it's a nice R1, all these big houses, and next thing you know, Carl moves in and buys his place and starts renting Airbnb out. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to register, he doesn't have to do anything, but he's got people coming and staying in the house, because it's, you know, let's face reality, some people have a large house and they figure, well, they can make some money on it. Sometimes maybe they're actually down on their luck and they figure, well, I'll start doing all Airbnb stuff. But the point is I understand there's zoning laws that each one of the towns have. But I don't think that's, you know, our concern is to get our 2% and the 8% sales tax.
No, but we're not getting the sales tax. We won't get the sales tax.
Well, we won't get the sales tax.
That's
the 2% we could get. And we're not getting the 2%. And the problem is, again, one person that does it through Airbnb doesn't pay the 2%. The people that are legit have to pay it.
Paying more.
They're actually paying more. So what is the incentive for me to register and start actually doing it the other way when I can get away with it? But why should I register my B&B if I can just keep on moving on and not have to pay any taxes on it?
Thank you, Dave. Mr. Gallo?
Three quick points, please. With respect to the definition of hotel, motel, what we did in our local law is in fact above and beyond what was provided in our New York State authorizing statute. So we said the term hotel or motel includes an apartment hotel, motor quarter, and boarding house or club, or similar hotel or motel type of accommodations by whatever name designated, whether or not meals is served, blah, 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 blah. Already in that instance, we've added in four examples above and beyond.
Then why don't you go after these people now instead of having to expand the resolution, expand the law?
In my eyes, this would prohibit people from paying this tax under protest. So we clarify this, we make sure it applies across the board, whether the intent was there to begin with or not, but now Johnny Operator has no chance to say, I don't have to pay that. But again, we are more than willing, if good Johnny wants to come in and pay his $2 every month, we'll take that. But we're just not willing to go actively out and enforce. Secondly, regarding the kind of the home rule local characteristics of this, our first draft was going down the road of a blanket application across the board to all municipalities as far as what this type of activity would entail, zoning, health requirements, etc. That shouldn't necessarily be the case because every municipality has a local flavor, a local context, and should be able to do this on their own. So we wanted to say, hey, Woodstock, you want to allow it, you want to prohibit it, that's up to you. Hey, Rosendale, you want to set up Airbnb zones, that's up to you. But it's still up to the municipality to decide. Third, regarding the third-party collection, once again, I bring us back to an example that's similar but different. What municipalities have begun doing is applying the 2% tax to rumor marketers. Who are they? A third party who collects and remits payments. They go in, they buy a block of rooms for a cheaper rate, they sell to the consumer for a more expensive rate. So municipalities, seeing this loophole, said, wait a second, companies are taking advantage of us, they should be paying the bed tax. So they've gone in and crafted their local laws to include and capture rumor marketers who are third parties collecting or remitting payments. And they found that as a third party, they can still remit back to the taxing jurisdiction, i.e. Ulster County or whomever. So there is precedent for that.
Hector?
Mr. Chair, I'm not even discounting everything that Deputy Comptroller Gallo has brought up, but when I've got all three legislative councils and the county attorney telling me that we can't do this, at least not yet, that there may be other steps that are needed before we can even get to this stage, it's going to make me pause, and it's going to make me actually want to pause on all of this. I mean, I actually honestly thought from our last discussion in caucus that that this was actually going to be held up this month to be able to kind of go and find out which of those procedural steps that we needed to go and take, whether there was needed a home rule request to go and change portions of state law that actually prohibit us, that there appears to be some sections that make this actually a bit of a hiccup, that may actually cause this actually to be an illegal action. Maybe, by the way, I want to make sure that I stress maybe, because I don't think anybody's got the definitive answer on this. But when I've got all three legislative attorneys and the county attorney saying to hold off on this, it's going to make me want to hold off on this.
All right, thank you, Legislator Rodriguez. And Carl, do you have something to add before
I just want to caution you that no matter what action we take, these things are here. I mean, I'm looking in my town right now in Port Newman. I see 8 properties, one right around the corner from my house, and they're not regulated. They're out there, and you know, they're not zoned commercial. Smart, they're not zoned the business.
It was graduation weekend this weekend in New Paltz. I should have just Airbnb'd my room.
Now, I had, for about 25 years, I had my own business. I had a home-based business, and I paid taxes on that business. I paid my quarterly sales tax. It was a small business. I didn't get rezoned like a commercial property in my town. But I came forth and did that because I know, you know, I was making money and everything had to be legit. You've got, I don't know, how many Airbnbs in Ulster County? Over 800 or 900 that have absolutely no, there's no authority over them whatsoever. Nothing.
That's not true.
So let me finish. They got no tax. We have no taxing authority over them. Okay?
That's not true.
Well, why isn't it true?
Are they paying
only
school
good
taxes,
Johnny's paying
property taxes?
Taxes, highway taxes.
Of course,
taxes.
Paying highway taxes.
Well, they're paying property,
social services
they're,
taxes.
They're paying property on their single family home.
And they're paying income taxes at the end of the year if they make money on their properties. If they're renting out for $2,000 a week and they bring in $100,000, they're paying federal, state, it's a business. So okay. They're paying plenty of taxes. To say they're not paying taxes, they're not paying.
Well, I'm not saying they're not. Let's say they're not paying the bed tax. That's for sure.
2%.
Okay, and who knows what they're paying really? If they're a legitimate business or not, you don't know. A business should have a New York State business certificate. They should be registered with the state of New York to operate a business. I'd like to know how many of these Airbnbs that are on here right now have a New York State certificate of a business certificate. Because how is the state going to tax them if they don't have a business certificate and they don't have
it's
a business entity?
On their income tax.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Rich,
doing
it's report taxes. On their income tax.
Yeah, Rich,
can
please.
I think you know, and I know for Tom and Evan and Carl, I said this before, so it's a little redundant. But to me, I think we're kind of looking to NJ. She was here last week. We're looking at this. I mean, you want to go to the Jersey Shore. You go online, or you pick up the phone, or you go to real estate, and you rent a house. They've had building inspectors that made sure the house was built correctly. They have, you know, it's not like all of a sudden this is some foreign business renting your house. You want to go to Lake George, you rent a house. You want to go to Cape Cod, you rent a house. You want to go to Florida, you rent a condo.
And
there's
we
no
want
special
people coming to Ulster County spending their money, not discouraging them.
You know, and I've said this at another meeting. I have two neighbors, two good friends, who are weekenders. And when they have families, this is their second homes, they know the weeks they're coming up here, the weeks they're not coming up, they rent their house out, the Airbnb or VRBO, whichever, vacation rental by owner. When people come in and stay in these houses, they're going to the liquor store, they're going to Emmanuel's, they're going to the Eggs Nest for lunch. They're going to Woodstock. So our thing needs to be, do we want these houses empty when the owners aren't here, or do we want people that are coming in who are certainly not coming in, they're not riffraff coming in. Do we want these people coming in who are going to utilize our communities and, you know, and we could say, well, they're using the roads. Well, the homeowner's paying road tax. Well, they're using the police. Well, the homeowner's paying their police. You know, the homeowner's being taxed. And these people are people that are coming into the community and spending money. I don't think it's rocket science. There's millions of towns in the United States that have had for 100 years people rent houses. People rent them. It's you know, the 2%, you want to collect that, I don't necessarily have a problem. I don't think the money should go in the general fund or to tourism. I think that's just I just think that's it doesn't do anything for the county except help them spend more money.
No, I certainly understand. I think we should be encouraging people to do that, but at the same time, we should also be, you know, not hurt businesses that are B&Bs that are paying, and then what happens is that they're in other words,
I'm not against the 2%.
They're paying it, but the next guy's not. So, I mean,
But that's about the 2%. We're talking about regulating on that.
I don't think it's a matter of regulation so much.
That's what it seems like this is.
No, I don't think that's about regulating. This is about just collecting the 2%. Well, I mean, I think sometimes you have to take a stand and move on.
I think the original law creates a stand. Do we want to expand that? I think not, at least in my opinion.
Well, the original law all he's doing is redefining hotels. So in other words, so these vacations are actually considered someplace where you can collect.
Consider a clarification rather than explanation.
Yeah, just clarifying it because now you got, it's sort of like in the old days, things change. And clarifying technology, clarified technology in 1940, what was it? Oh, you had the cheap change in the laws to fit the changing times.
If the B&Bs were included in the original law, we'd have the authority to go after them.
But
they are. B&Bs are.
But we're not going after them, and we should be.
Well, no.
They're registered
B&Bs. These people are because you're renting them through Airbnb. You're renting them through people that are just renting their house.
Go.
With most municipalities, bed and breakfasts have a special, they have to get a special use permit. They have to go through planning board approval and so on because they have to meet certain criteria, where these are just people's homes that they're renting. So they are covered by the enabling statute as well as our local law, but that's also because there's a regulatory scheme for them.
Yeah, you could rent your home tomorrow. You go through Airbnb.
Somebody would pay me the money.
Yeah, the only thing B&B about them is the name Airbnb. What do we classify these people who are renting rooms and cottages?
Well, if they're more than 90 days, then they're exempt from all this.
Yeah, I understand that. But what can we call them? Short-term rentals?
Sure.
That's it. Well, that's what they have it here. That's what the intent is, changing the name.
I mean, I agree with Dave that it's all about the money. It's about the 2%. That's what this resolution is
about. From Airbnb alone, could be upwards of
$250,000. And if you say that the county does have authority to collect this, it would be a monumental task to go out there and find these people and get the money, whereas the local law would enable.
And then there's an education component.
Well,
public outreach too.
It's no different with your income tax. When you file your income tax, at face reality, if you really wanted to cheat on your income tax, you can. You'd probably get away with it most of the time. But most people don't. The average person tries to pay.
People do. Because if you buy something on eBay out of state, are you paying sales tax at the end of the year?
That's a different one. That's a new technology thing. That's a new technology thing, yes. I understand that. But typically, when you pay your income tax, and most people pay their income tax, they're relatively honest. I mean, they may up a little something here and there, but they're really relatively honest.
Back it all up.
And that's what happens is if they... If they're regulated, now all of a sudden they'll sit sets. But it also says that the third party can collect. And that's a big change because that means Airbnb, when I run through there and you run yours and he runs
his, attorney says
they collect the 2%. Well,
can we get an opinion from the
slight loophole.
I mean,
it would be comptroller.
So can we wait till we get an opinion from him?
It's just we don't know if it's going to come.
They're really not forthcoming.
So it's going to be settled in court.
They don't.
That's it.
Yeah, so then let's hold off on it, though.
Idea. Why don't we just repeal the 2% for everybody? And then it becomes a moot point.
Now you're talking.
Then it's a level playing field, and it's fair for everybody. They still pay sales tax.
Stop making him happy, because you see what's happening now. He's getting all excited now.
Let's make an amendment. Anybody a second on that?
I'll second it.
It's $1 million. How much is that a year?
I don't have the figures right, but it's
million. It's about $1.5 million.
Can we not take action on this?
Yeah, but if it levels up.
And then just bring it up next month?
I'd move to postpone.
We already got voted on it in the other committee.
Yeah.
And passed. So whether it's postponed here or voted up or down,
I move to postpone.
You'd almost be better off. If it's postponed, it still goes to the floor, right? Because it passed the committee?
No.
It doesn't. So if it gets voted down, what happens?
It's got to go waste. Well,
if it's voted down, you have a petition to discharge or dead, one or the other, or you can postpone it, or you can.
Hector, I don't think you have a second on that motion.
Let's just vote on it. If it goes
all
down,
in
then
favor.
We get a.
I'm a yes.
I'm a yes. I'm a sponsor. All opposed?
I'm going to be a no now. I was a yes before, but I got to get a legal opinion. We got to clear the legal, in my opinion. Because I don't feel like going to court, because then nobody wins.
You're not going to go to court.
No, you did.
Although it would postpone the implementation of it, probably, right?
251. Rich, this is your baby.
That's my baby.
Amending the rules of order to set procedure for memorializing resolutions.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Thank you. I don't know if anybody had an opportunity to read it.
Yeah, we all.
Okay, well,
I'm ready to begin.
Hector?
I feel like I should debate it only because it's a resolution about debate.
Please start.
No, actually, you know.
Oh, that was a joke.
We have, I was totally joking. We were actually sort of actually touring this in caucus. We sort of went sort of almost both sides on this one. We actually haven't actually had a long, lengthy debate on a memorializing resolution in quite some time. As a matter of fact, I can't. No, I mean, I understand the problem that you've actually been talking about this, Rich, for a long time.
15
at
years.
At least. It's more like
since
the past.
Susan,
I was going to say, probably the past like 8 is probably around when it's probably popped up. But it's just sort of funny that you're bringing it up now because we actually haven't even had a resolution that sort of sparked that level.
Yes,
of,
can
you
I
know,
just comment? Last month we had a resolution that was debated. Two people debated each side of it and we're almost arguing with each other and then everybody voted the same way. That was last month.
2 months.
2 months ago.
Two months ago. I know, but that's not even that lengthy, you know, Rich. I mean, we used that, you know, we used
that
very lengthy debate.
We were in the UPAC.
That wasn't a lengthy debate. That was actually the public coming to testify. That was the part that's the reason why we needed UPAC. That's the reason why we needed, you know, this
memorializing resolution.
Well, we could still have them.
Yeah.
But there would just be no debate on them.
Yeah, I mean, but you could also, there's actually nothing that limits a long roll, and then people can go explain their vote if they really wanted to. You know,
and that's fine, too.
That you could do. But and then you actually wouldn't be debating, but people would be still speaking and
well,
whatever, but that's
if
fine.
Your letter comes before someone else's.
I know, and we can all play the game of who passes and not pass and have a little
I don't know.
War
I,
on that
I,
one, but,
you,
yeah.
You know, my issue is we will debate a memorializing resolution, and then the next resolution will be spending $4 million and nobody says a word.
Nobody cares.
And it's
true. It's just we debate these controversial things, but the things we're elected to do, the meat and potatoes things, we...
Well, you get worn out after debating a bunch of memorializing resolutions. You say, oh, damn, they just come with it. $4 million?
Anyway,
go
listen. Yes or no?
$4 million for new toilet chair.
This was Tom Kajian's...
This is Tom Kajian. The way I was a yes, but now I'm a no.
This is the Tom Kajian memorializing resolution.
I tell you, don't take any hair follicle samples.
Listen, if it doesn't work, we can always change it.
You can go back 30 years.
Do we have any further debate before I call a question?
Oh, I feel like I should debate, but no.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I'm opposed.
I have it.
Thank you, everybody. Except for Carl.
I made it to the vote. I waited to see.
Could you pee on this and get a urine sample from
so
you?
Oh, really?
Hey.
Okay, we have one late. 282. Proving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000. Entered into by the county, maybe.
Why is it late?
Jay, could you help me out here?
When they opened my understanding is when they opened the bid process and closed it, was after resolution deadline before session.
It's for a bridge.
For the Carmine LaBerge, temporary bridge.
It's for a bridge, and I understand that, you know, it's time sensitive with the weather coming in, and we got to get the bridge.
They have to get it done by June 15th.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll move it, by the way, because I don't know if anybody's going to move it.
It would paralyze New Falls.
Can I make a comment on this?
Go ahead.
I've heard because of the Verizon strike that it's being put on hold. Because they cannot move the telephone poles or the cables.
Is that true?
There's a pole right where the bridge is going to go.
Really,
and there's a big cable.
Oh, you mean where the temporary
bridge goes? Yep, where the temporary bridge goes. There's a pole, a big cable, and it's a cable that comes out of the village and it feeds everybody heading towards John Gum and up on Minnewaska.
Yeah.
but I'm sure we can.
And one of our linemen told me that.
I mean, no. I'm sick of paying. I'm sick of paying for all these bridges. I'm in the city of Kingston, and I get no bridges.
You get no bridge.
We get temporary bridge on Henry Street.
Temporary bridges. You get permanent bridges.
You get sinkholes.
Semi-permanent. Yeah, and we pay for our own sinkholes.
That's right. You pay for
the bridge over that sinkhole.
That's what we need.
I thought they were
going
to build a bridge over or under.
Now, what if we were able to build a bridge over the sinkholes? We wouldn't get you guys to pay for it. No, it's in Kingston, and we're not paying for it.
For as long as it took, we probably should have thought about it.
We'll make Washington Avenue a state highway.
All in favor of the bridge at New Paltz?
Aye.
Any old or new business? Rich?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.
Aye.
Thank you all.
I adjourn in memory of Wayne Ayers.